Welcome to Podnuts, Computer Repair Podcast, episode number 191. I am your host, Jeff Hallish. Computer Repair Podcast is brought to you by FreshBooks, the simple, pain-free invoicing solution for freelancers and small business owners. Try it free at freshbooks.com/podnuts. This is our live call-in show for computer repair techs. We answer your questions on running and operating your computer repair business. The call-in number is 1-888-697-0162. Let me introduce the co-host. We have none other than Marvin B. from maninavan.net. How you doing, Marvin?
Holla.
You're looking good in sunny Florida.
It's actually a little cloudy today.
Yeah, it is here too.
Just a tad.
Also joining us today, we have John Dubinsky from the Maven Group. How you doing, John?
Locked and loaded, Jeff. Let's go.
Locked and loaded. Love it. Okay, so let's go ahead and take care of a little business. We have the Toronto On Convention, July 22nd through the 24th, 2016. It's less than 1 week away. We will be in Toronto, Canada, hanging out, having a good time, talking tech, and doing some other things. So I definitely, if you guys have not gotten your tickets, this is like the last hurrah. And you've got a passport or an enhanced driver's license if you're going to drive, definitely check it out. And tickets are $200. I've got a link in the show notes. Go ahead and use that link. I get a little small payback for that. And definitely show up because we are going to have a blast. There still are some tickets left. So, all right. What types of things are we going to have going on at this Toronto On Convention, fellas?
Well, we are going to be partying in Toronto, as I understand it.
Party!
No, it's going to be a good time. It's going to be just a bunch of us sitting around talking tech. Got some very good sessions lined up. Got a couple of nice labs set up. I don't think that there is not going to be anybody leaving that isn't going to think, wow, that's a lot of tech.
Oh, awesome. That's what I like to hear. So would you say there's going to be practical information that people are going to be able to take away and go put into their businesses on Monday morning?
I think the word you're looking for is called actionable information.
Actionable. There you go.
That works.
I'm sorry, John. I'm looking at that computer behind you, and I know people can't see this. Is that like a Windows 98 box or what? I'm seeing the light blue color.
No, that's this one?
Yeah.
10.
Oh, it's Windows 10 with no icons or two icons.
Two icons. Yeah, that one back there is doing an image, if you can see the screen on that.
Gotcha.
One.
Okay. All right. Sorry, squirrel. Anyways, so the Toronto On Convention, I think we're going to have a good time. And the number one key is we're going to be hanging out. If you would like to hang out with any of us, we've got myself, John, Marvin. We've got Paco LeBron, Mike Smith from the Mike Tech Show. We've got a bunch of other people that are going to be there. And Martin Obando. Yep. So he's actually driving in with us. That'll be cool. And we're going to have a great time. And there's a lot of things that you're going to be able to take away from this and use in your business. So I highly, highly recommend that you actually, get your tickets and get over there. And we'll talk some tech and hope to see everyone there. Before we go into, one other thing, I want to talk a minute about travel advice. I know Mike Smith did this on his show, in talking about things that you need to think about. And I want to, as a group here, I want to figure out some of the things that might be important when we're traveling to Canada from the United States. If you're already in Canada, you're used to this stuff. So one of the things that I know is an issue, and I have to actually make a phone call on Monday, is cell phone minutes or cell phone data. Do you guys know anything about that as far as traveling in North America, but actually out of the United States?
Well, I would say it's a little bit carrier specific, but I would check with your carrier whether you're in one of the big three, or using a subcarrier like Cricket or Boost or one of those. I mean, you got to find out what your carrier is going to do to you and what your plan's going to do to you. Now, I've never had a trouble close to the border, but I haven't been this deep in a long time.
Okay. Marvin?
Yeah, it is carrier specific. I believe T-Mobile has built-in minutes for Canada and Mexico. I think all the other plans you either have to add international, and I know that Mike specifically talked about AT&T because I also have that, and I had in the past been purchasing what they call their passport plan, which will add international minutes text. But it's a hefty price. And he did find a nice little deal that you can have the Canada roaming, but in order to get to it, you have to go through AT&T's retention department. You can't just call them and ask for it.
Okay.
Because the people, the first line people will not know what you're talking about. And then they'll think to bring in an international person, and the international person, they'll see the plan, but they won't be able to add it for you. So you have to get to retention and basically go through that route.
Okay. Now I'm on Sprint, and I checked with them, and basically I got to still call them, but it looked like on their website, I can actually add the Canada and Mexico for free, but I definitely have to call them and get that added onto my plan. And I don't know if it's phone specific, like I have six phones on my plan, or if it covers all six phones, I'm not really sure. So I'm going to check with them and find out what that's going to cost me. If not, you know, I might be shutting my phone off and doing it the old fashioned way. Give me a compass and a map and we're good to go.
Yeah. The AT&T plan is a purchase. It's a $20 per month add-on.
Okay. But it's temporary. So 1 month.
You can do it temporary. I mean, much like the passport plan that they have, I think there's a $40 plan, an $80 plan. And the one that I usually do is the $120.
Okay.
But it only gives you a couple hundred megs of data, and then you still pay for minutes on the passport plan. So the Canada roaming plan, you do not pay for those minutes.
Okay. That's good to know. One of the other things is, and maybe you guys might know a little bit more about this, I really don't know because it's been a long time since I've traveled out of country, but as far as bank cards or credit cards, Mike did explain this on his show, and there was a couple things that he had talked about as far as use of them. Obviously, you can use American cash at vendors and restaurants and stuff like that, but they're going to charge you some sort of charge as far as changing over the rate versus if you went to a bank and actually changed the money ahead of time. But as far as credit cards or bank debit cards, does anyone know exactly how those work?
Well, with your credit card, if you use your credit card up there, first thing I do, I would call your card and say, hey, I'm traveling overseas, going over to Canada across the border, just to let them know so they don't freeze your account.
Okay.
But the other thing is they will just do the conversion rate based on what they charge. So if you buy something $100 Canadian, you'll get back and it'll be $2.50 US.
Okay. Gotcha. So they do that. So you can just use that card on the fly and no issues there.
Yep.
Okay. Cool.
But obviously when you get back, it won't be a dollar for dollar.
Sure. Now our exchange rate is we're in favor. We're doing better, right? Traveling over there and spending our money. Is that how the rate works?
Our dollar is stronger than the Canadian dollar at this time. That is correct.
Gotcha. So that should be still in effect for the next week, I would hope.
So. All right. Little update. I use Cricket, which is an AT&T carrier.
Okay.
And I'm looking at their page right now. And as long as you're on one of the, there's four tiers when you're on Cricket with a smartphone. If you're on if you're on the basic plan, you do not have Canadian coverage. If you're on any other plan, you do have unlimited calls, unlimited texts, picture, video messages, and your data.
Very cool. Okay.
While you're in Canada. So.
Good to know. So definitely check that out. The other thing, and I don't have a link for this. I think Mike might have put one on for his last show, but insurance, and I know Corey Fruitman from Instant House Call has talked to us about this, and I think it's something like $16 for health insurance for the week or something like that. Does that sound right, Marvin?
Yeah, I think he might have done two. His was $32.
I think for him and his wife, probably, yes.
Yeah, so it's probably two. So that's probably right.
Okay. So $16 for health insurance in case anything happens. It's kind of...
Where do you do this?
What's that?
Where do you do this?
That I'm not sure. I'll have to search for a link after the show to see if I can find out. I know Mike might have put something in his show notes. I didn't get a chance to check yet. I don't think Corey put anything up on the Unconvention webpage as of yet. So, but we'll definitely check that out and hopefully get that back. The thing is, regardless, it's just like here in the U.S. when you go into the hospital, they have to treat you, so they'll treat you regardless. But if you're concerned about it, there's something that's, you know, $16 is not bad for the week. All right. Anything else we can think about? Electricity is the same, right? We don't need to bring special chargers or anything like that.
Oh, well, they converted to us a long time ago.
It's good. That's the way it should be. I'm sorry for my Canadian friends. I'm just messing with you. So, okay. Anything else we can think about that we need to think about while we're traveling? Obviously, make sure you leave ahead of time. We don't know exactly what the border crossing or, you know, traveling through the airport and getting checked out there, what that's going to take. It could be slow or fast. Just depends.
And don't be stupid at the border either.
Yeah.
Don't bring anything you shouldn't be bringing, and don't try to take anything home that you shouldn't be taking home.
And don't be a smart aleck to the border crossing guards. They're just trying to do their job. God bless them. That's all I'm going to say. That's the one part of the trip I'm not looking forward to. But anyways, it's all good.
Oh, it'll be great.
It'll be fine. Okay. Anything else? Anything else we need to think about while we're over there? Don't get into trouble. Don't cause any fights. Don't do anything stupid, like John said. I think that's about it. So,
well, I didn't necessarily mean all stupid things. I just said don't do anything stupid at the border.
Pretty much, that's the biggest thing is you don't want to get a huge phone bill when you get home. So make sure that you take care of that. The other thing you don't want is you obviously want to be able to buy things like food and things like that. Even though a lot of things will be provided at the Unconvention, you're still going to want that ability. So make sure that you think ahead accordingly to what you're going to do. And check that out. But yeah, definitely call your bank. And thank you, John. I'm going to add that to my list. All right. John, if you want to share a tip or story with us that we could learn from this week, that would be great.
I have nothing to contribute. All I've been doing for the last 2 weeks is Windows 10 upgrades.
Ooh. How's that been going?
Pretty good. You know, the only thing I have is... You know, the computer mystery that has plagued me my whole life. So a lot of manual clicking while I do this. Mm. I've been using, previous to this upgrade cycle, I've been using GRC's number 10. So tips. I'll give you some tips along the way that I found. You do not need to uninstall or do anything with GRC.
Right.
If you're going to use the key, you just leave GRC installed. Tip from Mike Smith. I do copy the installation files to the C drive. It makes it go much faster than even going from a USB 3 stick, so that works great. But the funny thing that makes me laugh all the time is, you know how you click a button and the button changes color and clicks, but nothing happens? Then you have to click it again and again. You know, once you've done that 75 times at an office, it kind of gets old. I have not had any rollback failures, and I've probably done 200 PCs. So knock on wood, I'm like Magic Mike so far with that, but that's it. I don't have anything interesting to contribute, except I'm tired of doing Windows 10 upgrades.
I hear you there. And let me say something about a lot of people, and I've found this out more recently, that a lot of people want to use USB flash drives because they're supposed to be oh so fast and they do everything great. And I'm gonna tell you from a USB flash drive standpoint, in what I've seen here in my office, they vary in speeds greatly. And I don't care how big the flash drive is. The problem is that USB 3, whatever firmware they're using, whatever company or brand that you bought, they vary very wildly. So what I would suggest, if you're doing any type of installs and you want a fast transfer, people are going to find this funny, actually use a spinning drive. because you're going to get a, you can get a Western Digital Passport or something like that, a 1 terabyte drive. You are going to get consistent fast speeds through a USB 3.0 on that spinning drive than you ever will through any flash drives. And that's,
I'd take that even a little further, Jeff. I agree with you 100%, but it also depends on probably the driver and the chipset on the machine that you're connecting to. So what I did in all the offices that I'm doing is I copy my installation files to the server, and then I copy them down to the endpoints through the network, which is about 10 times faster.
Ooh, nice. Okay. That's good. That's good. Yeah, so obviously getting the files on there and doing it from there is going to be the quickest way. But if you're trying to do it offline or trying to do it quick and dirty, definitely your flash drives, in my opinion, are just not the way to go for a lot of things. They work great for some things, but not for everything. And Mr. Marvin, what do you got for us this week?
Let's see. I will say that I had a technician that was in another city that I had installing a wireless access point get a little worried that he had done something wrong, because what I sent to the office was an open mesh MR1750 wireless access point. And I basically put in the instructions, go to the client, plug it in, wait for the four lights to go blue, then call me.
It doesn't get any simpler than that, my friend.
And he panicked. He's like, are you sure? And I said, yep. So he went there, called me. I got onto my web portal, saw the Wi-Fi router. I said, okay, click on this SSID, put in this password. And he's like, oh, wow. So you don't have to do anything? I said, no, you're done. You can leave. Charge me half an hour and I'll see you later.
Nice. There you go.
Man, just, I love open mesh.
Yeah, just a testimony for open mesh, you know, that it's that easy. I mean, all you do is if you've got your configuration's already done, you just add the access point, ship it to where it needs to go. I mean, it's simple enough that I've had end users do it.
Wow. Okay.
Just in case anybody doesn't know, open mesh is a cloud controlled wireless network and hardware.
Yes.
Yep.
Okay.
Yeah, I'm gonna have to try that out one of these days.
Yeah, and I use it for, I mean, it's not super powerful. Don't think that it's going to replace, you know, your Ruckus devices. It's for offices that just need basic periodic internet. They just need to surf, check email. They're not going to be doing a ton of heavy downloading. If the office needs more than that, then they need to get a higher class wireless access point. But open mesh is good. I've replaced all of my, you know, consumer grade wireless access points, even some of my lower class business ones.
I think it sits in the middle. I think you're right, Marv. It sits in the middle.
And one of the things that's great, because for customers that have multiple locations, you don't have to worry about a person traveling from location to location, worried about the password. Is the SSID different? And if you do have to change something, you change it in the cloud web portal, and it changes every access point within minutes. So if you change a password, it's changed across the entire board. You don't have to log into each actual access point to change that password.
And the other nice thing too, that's the one that has four SSIDs, right?
Yes.
Four SSIDs. And it has, I'll add on to what Marvin says, it does have some basic controls and reporting too, meaning you can do some MAC address tracking to see who's sucking down all the Netflix bandwidth and that kind of stuff.
Well, and I'll tell you what I need to do, and I'll probably do this once I get back from the ON convention. What I wanted to do is take my wireless devices, like my Ring doorbell or my Echo, Amazon Echo and stuff like that. And I wanted to put those on something, a different Wi-Fi. So probably what I'm going to do is use one of those where I can actually differentiate that stuff. And even if I'm putting customers, which I do periodically, not all the time, I usually hardwire stuff, but I want to put customers' computers that I'm working on and have those on their own separate wireless access where it's not interfering with the regular stuff we're doing here. So on my one router.
I have a tip now that Marvin's brought up open mesh, if I can toss it in there.
Go ahead.
Just a little tip in case anybody doesn't know this. When you set up a mesh network, so that's what open mesh is, meaning that all of these access points will work together. The best way to set up any access point is to have it cabled directly into your network and have it somewhere. But with a mesh network, obviously, these devices will communicate together. So if you take an open mesh access point and put it out in the open, and all it is powered, it will connect, or that communication will hop through the mesh network over to that non-wired connected access point. But keep in mind, here's the tip, is that you will lose about one half your speed with that hop. And you will lose one half more every hop thereafter when there's not a cabled connection.
Okay.
So a lot of people or a lot of guys have come to me and said, well, I put these open mesh in, but they suck. It's so slow. And I'm, well, you know, and they got 17 of them in a row. That's a little bit of an exaggeration. But, you know, so you always want to try, or you want to limit yourself to one hop.
Okay.
Of an uncabled hop. Otherwise, your speeds will really suffer.
Okay.
And that's true with any access point hop. You're going to lose some speed.
That's a good tip. Very good tip.
That's why when people buy these Wi-Fi extenders and bridges, they get all upset with the performance that it didn't do. It's going to lose power, folks. It's fully powered, fully cabled is the best way to go.
Yep. Absolutely. So very good points. All right. So I think with that, one of the things I started working with this week is I was playing around with Easy to Boot since we've had several techs talk about it over the last month or so. I've used it in the past, didn't get it to work well. So I set it up because I think, John, I can't remember, but I think you sent me something on the Bitdefender Rescue Disk or Rescue ISO, correct? Was that you?
Yeah, I think so.
It was a while back. Anyway, so I finally took that ISO and I said, all right, let me add this into my Easy to Boot flash drive. Just to see if I can get it to boot up. And so what I did was I downloaded that Kaspersky Rescue CD and several other CDs. And I took the ISOs, put them right in Easy to Boot. And I'm running actually Bitdefender on this computer behind me just to run it in the background just to see what it does. It's already shown me 25 infections, which I know are probably legitimate tools that I have on my bench computer. But I want to see what it's flagging and what it's actually doing. So I'm starting to test some of those things out. I don't normally have to use rescue CDs as much anymore. I can usually get in. A lot of times you got to use a rescue CD if you don't have a good system restore point, which is the first thing that I do. So if you don't have that, then you got to figure out something else to get in there and see if you can get those to work. But I like rescue CDs. I used to use them all the time, just a lot less. So, but yeah, Easy to Boot seems to work just fine for what I need. Let's see. Let's play our voicemail and then we can answer some of these questions. And let's see. Hopefully you guys can hear this.
Hello, good morning. I'm not sure if you already touched base on this question that I'd like to ask. I was looking at the history of your podcast and I didn't see anything related to SharePoint versus SharePoint Online. And I would like to know what is the main difference for a tech support, say for me, offer my clients SharePoint versus SharePoint Online. I think just giving some thought about it, I think that if we go to SharePoint, there's a lot of overhead maintenance that you're supposed to do, and you really are supposed to do what you're doing, especially when the servers are down and you don't have no email. But if you use SharePoint Online, one of the advantages is that you have a whole Microsoft engineering team that will take care of the service being up running 99.9% of the time. Now, I understand that if you use SharePoint Online, then there's things that you cannot do, advanced features and stuff like that. Probably you will do it with a remote PowerShell. But that's the question pretty much. What would you advise, whether you use SharePoint or SharePoint Online? Thank you.
All right. Very good. And I believe that was from, I'm looking at the name here that I got on that voicemail, Marlo Castrillo. And I'm sorry if I butchered your name, but anyways, that is an excellent question. And I know next to nothing about SharePoint, except that my understanding from talking to other techs, it's a love or hate relationship. You either love it or you hate it. And so from your guys' standpoint, do you use SharePoint, and in what form or fashion do you use it, and how does it work best as far as being able to take care of it on a regular basis?
Well, I would start with Marlo's question. I would suggest, and not to pick on Marlo, because I would put myself in the exact same book, that if he's kind of asking that question, there's probably no way he should probably be installing his own SharePoint server. Meaning, running a SharePoint server is much more complex than running even like an Exchange server or something like that. And yes, there are a lot of moving parts. SQL, you got to have a good understanding of SQL because that's the database on the back end. You got to have a good understanding of IIS. And you got to have a good understanding of all the integrated and internet security things.
Wait. You just said IIS. What is that?
Internet Information Services, or what do they call it now, B? They changed the name?
No, it's still that. They do have World Wide Web Services.
Yep.
Okay.
But it's...
I would never try to tackle that. I mean, now he is correct. I don't even know where to go with this. I mean, I would never try to do that. Now, if you're the SharePoint guy, I mean, you can run around, or if you could partner with somebody that's your SharePoint expert, because I think he hit the nail on the head. I have one client left running a SharePoint server, and it is hosted. And the reason they run it is because SharePoint does integrate with a lot of things, meaning like Salesforce and other applications. So they pull a lot of data in and out of their SharePoint services. But that thing, there are little problems all of the time, and it's just a beautiful thing for me to ring up Microsoft. And keep in mind, you can also host with a bunch of people, Rackspace, Intermedia. Yeah, I'm probably moving who do you use, B? I know you're good. I forget the name of the company you use. App River does it. Yeah. But yeah, boy, when something breaks, it's great to have those guys that know what's going on to be able to drive the bus with SharePoint.
So definitely something you wouldn't do yourself then.
Absolutely not. Not in my opinion. It's not something you want to install and try to learn as you're going.
Okay. Marvin?
I mean, there are a lot of moving parts.
Yeah, here's I think where a lot of that started from. You know, SharePoint was included in the small business server. And even though it is complex, it was kind of easy because everything was done through the wizards and it worked out of the box. So all you had to do is, you know, when you added a user, it added them to the SharePoint portal. And if, as long as people knew how to upload files and calendar events, that's all they used it for. Since Small Business Server has gone away, I still have a few people on SharePoint. Most of them are doing it through Office 365 and through AppRiver. And I can tell you this, if you are, let's just say, one customer I have that I was looking at trying to get them onto the SharePoint with AppRiver, $1,200 for them to set it up and transfer the software. So at that point, my customer's like, I don't think we need SharePoint that much. And like John said, there's way too many moving parts that unless you're going to do that, you know, unless you're going to be a software database web guy, I would very highly recommend against technicians trying to work with SharePoint. I won't touch SharePoint, even the hosted. I just won't. I don't need that sucking up all my time. And just a quick story, I have a customer that had the small business server SharePoint, and I got them off of that. And we moved their intranet to a part of their web page. And it was done by the very fine Matthew Rodella, by the way.
Nice.
And they didn't like it because they didn't think it was fast enough. And of course, it's not like their old intranet. So they convinced me to let them try SharePoint Foundations, which is the version that you can still download that will run SharePoint for you. But let's just say Junior didn't quite realize how involved it was because he's trying to do it on SQL Express. I gave him a 2008 server because I didn't want him. We weren't going to buy a brand new server for him. And let's just say it's taken him about a month to get it up and running. And I just found out that it actually hasn't been running for the last month because it restarted and some services won't run, and he doesn't know how to fix them, so he asked me to help. I don't know how to fix them, so I don't know what we're going to do.
Wow.
Because I don't know if I'm going to charge him $100 an hour for me to go figure it out, or if I'm just going to call somebody and say, hey, you know, figure this out and bill me and I'll get it to the customer. So those are the types of things you run into where, you know, it is a lot involved.
Give me a use case scenario for SharePoint. And also, is there something else out there that can be used besides SharePoint to do the same things?
That's a very open-ended question, because yes, SharePoint can be used for a ton of things. Document sharing, collaboration, intra, out-of-office intranets, internets. I mean, that's kind of the power behind it, but also the complexity, meaning you can set up some sort of SharePoint site and have it do all, manage projects, calendaring, communications. I mean, it's very open-ended. That's a tough question to answer. And as far as alternatives, depending on what you're trying to do, there's a bunch of them. Probably the biggest ones that I know of is, if you're a Google for Work customer, you'd want to look at Google Sites. There's a product called Huddle. It's a product called Igloo. Probably Igloo. And then the other one that comes to mind is Confluence. Confluence is by Atlassian, who does HipChat. But Confluence and Igloo are probably the closest out of that list that are to SharePoint. But SharePoint does more than probably all those four products put together. But then you pay with that complexity. So you got to really define what it is you're trying to do.
Gotcha. So it sounds to me like SharePoint would be for much larger businesses, I would say, than smaller businesses. Would that be correct? Because I'm just trying to think of a use case scenario. Even when you're talking things like intranet and stuff like that, who in small to medium businesses, who actually needs that type of stuff anymore?
Well, the company that I have that runs SharePoint is a small company, about 15 employees, but okay, they do a lot of government work. So they use their SharePoint for government contracts and all these different government organizations to be able to communicate and log in.
Okay.
Because I don't know if SharePoint's big in government, but that was the easiest way for them to connect their Salesforce and a lot of other tracking and reporting tools and share information for all this contracting that they do or they set up with the government.
Okay.
So that's a big thing. I do have some customers who use Google Sites, and primarily what they're using it for is intranets, but they'll put things like company information, employee handbook, all that kind of stuff out on their Google site. Okay. So they don't have to publish that stuff regularly. And that will send links to new hires for training, for publications, for all that kind of stuff. And say, read it, and then here, sign this that you did it.
Okay. No, it makes sense. Marvin, any other use case scenarios that you can think of?
Yeah, that's pretty much it. Mine are using it more for intranet, where they are putting their HR documents up there. They've got a company calendar that's there. The announcements, whenever they do internal announcements, you know, somebody got promoted or whatever, all that's there. And extension list. I mean, it's a web page that most people use for the internal company and not public facing.
Okay.
The last company that I have that I'm actually hosting their server, they don't have an office anymore. Their server's here with me, and they remote in, you know, they go to their SharePoint page to access their documents and all their stuff. That's the one company I'm going to move to a hosted sometime, because I don't want their server after next year.
And it's pretty cool. If you get a customer that's really interested, like I had one customer with the office manager, she just ran with it. And she actually started building stuff just to ease her day. Like, she built a little application within Google Sites that's a form and gives her feedback for lunch. So because she got tired of everybody just coming in and giving them the lunch order, you know, all the guys that work there and the gals that, you know, put their lunch order in. So she just has a form. Here's where we're eating today. People go in, select what they want, put, and then she gets a printout.
Nice.
She built that all of herself in Google Sites without any of my help. And it works great. So, I mean, it can be done, but I don't think, like, I wouldn't even know where to start to do that in SharePoint.
Okay. Gotcha.
So,
well, it's funny. If you look at the SharePoint online with, you know, Office 365, they've got apps built into it now where a lot of that stuff is just templated. So in theory, you can do it, but it's that whole customization thing. And if something doesn't work, what do you do? And that's where it gets tricky. I do have a buddy that's actually set up SharePoint for his customers, and he uses it as kind of like his mini help desk, where the company gets a new person hired. There's a place they go in under the SharePoint site, put in the person's name, position, blah, 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 hit send, and he's got it scripted out to where it will do all of the stuff necessary to set up the user account, set up the email, sends him a notification so he can do some other stuff. So there's a lot of scripting that can be done with it to automate a lot of your stuff, make a little tickler system based off that new hire. So,
and to get back to Marcellus, was it Marcello, Jeff? I don't want to be crucified.
Yeah, Marlo, I think.
Marlo?
I think it was Marlo. I could have messed it up.
Polo. Well, to get back to his other question, you know, he said there was a lot about his PowerShell, that you got to use a lot of PowerShell with hosted Exchange. And that is true, but it's come a long way. There are much more options that are graphical now and things for you to do, but you do have to do a lot of PowerShell scripting to maybe fix things. Cool thing is, though, if you do a little Googling, or maybe Microsoft would like me to say Binging, you can find those scripts. It's not like they're hidden to run them and do them yourself. It's not that hard.
So I guess the bottom line to this whole question is you're probably going to want to use some sort of hosted SharePoint, whether it be through AppRiver or whomever, and you're going to want the ability to either call them at AppRiver or to be able to call if you're using a straight off of Office 365 through Microsoft, or be able to call Microsoft in order to get some of these things worked out, correct?
IMO.
Okay.
Yep. All right. And remember, the cost of SharePoint Online is your typical per person per month cost. Whereas if you were to do it yourself, you got to think of the cost of a server, cost of SharePoint. SharePoint Foundations is free, but cost of a SQL server, and then your maintenance there. So, it can add up pretty quick.
Okay. Very good. All right, let's take a quick break, and then we will go into our emails. Our show today is brought to you by FreshBooks. It is the simple cloud accounting solution designed for small business owners to painlessly send invoices, track time, and capture expenses. Save time for most computer repair shops. It's the very thing that always seems to be in short supply. Tons to do, and never enough time to get it all done. The good news is our friends over at FreshBooks feel your pain and have created something to help you reclaim some of your precious time and be more productive. FreshBooks has created an amazingly simple invoicing solution for small business owners who need to focus on their work and not on their paperwork. Oh, and the invoicing is only the beginning. FreshBooks keeps all your cash flow details in one place so you know exactly what invoices you sent, when you sent them, who paid you, and who owes you what. Your mobile app lets you take pictures of your receipts and organize them for later, which makes claiming expenses at tax time a breeze. It only takes about 30 seconds to create a really professional-looking invoice. FreshBooks can even show you whether or not a client has looked at the invoice once you've emailed them, which I think is genius. Hey, did you get my invoice? No, I didn't see it. Really? Interesting. Because it shows you that you opened it up. I love that. Anyways, you could also call their helpful support line and you'll get to speak to a human right away. Yay for that. No phone trees, no annoying pre-recorded messages. I'm sold right there. I hate phone trees. Listen, companies, I don't like phone trees. So these guys, you can actually talk to a human being, which is awesome. Best part is FreshBooks will definitely streamline how you manage this stuff on a day-to-day basis, but you'll also find that as tax time comes, you'll be so much more prepared and way less stressed. FreshBooks is offering you a free 30-day trial to try it out with no credit card required. Go to freshbooks.com/podnuts and enter podnuts in the How Did You Hear About Us section. We want to thank FreshBooks for sponsoring this episode of the Computer Repair Podcast. All right, so let's go into our email session. All right, first of all, some of you are probably wondering, and I didn't mention it because I wanted to read his email. Chris is not here today, and here's why. Chris sent me an email. If he gets mad at me for reading the email on the air, he can have words with me on Friday. Anyways, here it is. It says, subject line is, okay, this is going to sound bad, of which I started laughing already, from our good friend Chris Crothers. It says, incompletely apologize, but I didn't realize that my kilt fitting would take this long. We started at 11, I don't think it will go that long. So I think what he meant to say, and this was, I think it was on Outlook for Android. So Chris was getting fitted for a kilt, I'm assuming for his wedding coming up here in the next like year. But yeah,
doesn't everybody do that?
Yeah. And here I'm thinking, I go, dude, really? You got to get fitted for a kilt? I figured one size fits all. You put a rope around there, you're good to go, right? You can cinch it in. You can, I mean, it did overlap on each other, right?
That's a brave part, for God's sake.
Just take a blanket and wrap it around you and put a staple in it.
There you go.
I have a question.
Go ahead. I don't know if I have an answer.
Not Scotland, right? Is there something I don't know about Chris and or his better half?
I don't know. I don't know. He just, it threw me off, and I just thought it was such a funny email that I had to add it to the show and let you guys know Chris is okay. He's just getting his kilt filtered.
Is this a Canadian thing? The kilt thing?
All right. So he's ordering a special one. He's not just renting one, because you know they can just rent.
Yeah. Kilts, you know? Well, you probably still have to get fitted for that, right? Like a tux, I would imagine.
Yeah, all you do is take a tape measure. And
okay, I'm sorry. Which one of us actually wants to wear somebody else's kilt? That's all I got to say.
Okay.
You have seen Braveheart, right?
Yes.
Okay.
Is that with or without underwear? I'm sorry. But anyways, that's just wrong.
Halloween's coming up soon, Jeff.
It could be.
Why don't you look for a costume?
You know, it would be really good if we could find four kilts and show up at his house.
Oh, my gosh. We might have to do that. All right. Anyways, Chris is okay. He's just getting his kilt fitted. Anyways, second email.
Hey, Perry in the chat just sent a link where you can do it yourself and you can do your own measurements, but I wouldn't go to the site he sent.
Okay.
So
gotcha.
You might get your eye poked out if you're not careful. Thanks, Perry. Thanks.
Yeah.
A lot. Hang on. I got to get a drink.
Oh, my.
All right. The second email is from Alan, and it's very short and succinct. It says, subject is subscribe, and the subject or the message line says cheers. So cheers to you, Alan. Thank you. And hope you're enjoying the show. All right. I had to throw that in there because I thought it was nice to get somebody saying cheers, to be honest. All right. So anyways, let's see. This is from Michael Mary, who sent us a email a couple weeks ago asking Marvin about the fluke. All right.
Uh-oh, wait. Is this his rebuttal? Because
No. I asked him about, is there any topics that you would like talked about? I try to ask everyone that question. And every once in a while, somebody will send me a response back.
Okay.
He says, I was thinking about topics and thought of one. As I do this on the side, the amount of business I do is not that high a priority. I have been trying to run numbers to see what it would take to go full time. My sticking point is how many billable hours per week I would need and how to go about filling them. I figure at my current hourly rate, I need 15 to 20 billable hours to make my current salary after taxes and expenses. So he's already figured that part out, which is good. Good job, Michael.
Is he sure?
Well,
that'd be my first question.
Yeah, there are things you need to check in there, but you know, but even doing the math, even trying to do the math from the beginning is a good start, right?
We'll talk about that in Canada.
All right. Yes. It says, I know retainer clients are golden, but I'm still trying to figure out a pricing structure for that. I would love to go to the On convention, but that is not possible for me. Sorry about that. Basically, what does the panel think the sweet spot is for a ratio of retainer clients to break fix? Michael Mary. Thanks, Michael. Appreciate the question. And it's a great question, and it's an age-old question, and we have kind of talked about different things off and on, but I don't think we've ever dealt with percentages that you want to have of retainer clients versus there's people that do break-fix like 90%, right? And then they might have 10% retainer, or you'll have MSPs that do 90% retainer and 10% break-fix. Is there a sweet spot? Is there somewhere that you would, I guess what he's really asking is, what would be a point that I need to get to that it would make me comfortable to leave my job and to go into this full time?
Johnny, you're going to give away too much of your.
Well, I was just thinking to myself, how much time we got, because
Go for it, man.
You're talking about the entire class that I'm going to give in Canada. I don't know if I want to spill it now or do it the week after.
Well, let's talk about some of the things that, I mean, we can talk about, you know, percent, what would make you feel comfortable? Because you guys are coming from a different standpoint of where most of your clients are retainer at this point, correct?
All of my clients. Well, not, see, that's misconceptions. What does somebody mean when they say retainer? Does that mean you're just prepaying me hourly for the month? Is that what you mean by retainer?
It could be. So the retainer has many multiple meanings. Very true.
See, because I think...
Go ahead. Say
I'm going to start a fight. I think retainer billing sucks.
Okay.
If all you're doing is getting prepaid for hourly that you roll over.
So explain what you mean by that, because I know how you do it, but explain again to everyone, what in simple terms, what do you do for your customer that makes it this a la carte or this all-in-one inclusive type of billing that you do for them? And what do you do kind of for them? Well,
Here's why I think hourly billing and retainer hourly billing is no good. All right. You have about 260/261 days, depending on the leap year, of billable days per year. And really, you got to round that down to sick days, vacation, to about 200.
Okay.
Let's say on average, let's say you work 10 hours a day. B, out of those 10 hours, how many are billable? Throw me a number. First thing that comes in your head.
Well, you're going to start arguments.
No, say it.
For my formula.
No. Just general.
My formula, it's 50%.
All right. So you can bill 5 hours. Hey, Paco, you can bill 5 hours.
Okay.
A day. So you got 200 times five times your hourly rate. All right. So now that's what you're going to make. That's all you're going to make. You can't make any more than that. All right. Because now you have to trade your time for that money, all right? If you get a retainer client, you're still doing the exact same thing. All they've done is guaranteed that you'll get a minimum amount of those hours, but you have to roll those hours, and I'm being general, this is the way I understand retainer from everybody talking to it, you have to roll those hours over to the next week, next period. So 10-hour a month retainer client, you use 8, they get 12 the next month. Something like that is the way I understand everybody does a retainer.
Now, not everybody does that way. Not everybody does rollover.
All right. So the way that big consulting firms and the way that I do it the right way. All right. Everybody knows me better than that. Is right. I think the way to do it is fixed bill. All right. Because you have to take your math and you have to determine on your own what is called value added time and what is non-value added time. All right. Non-value-added time, building your USB sticks, doing maintenance, documentation, all of this stuff that you can't bill for, all right? So value-added time is the time that you're turning the wrench and getting paid where you can bill. So that's why we only got 5 billable hours a day. You need the other 5 to be doing whatever it is you're doing. Marketing, non-value-added time, all right? You're not making money. So fixed billing, I can charge $100 a month for a client, just using a round number. I lay around all day in my underpants. I am still getting paid.
Right.
All right. Now, I tell everybody, you got to have integrity, sincerity, and resilience. So I'm not saying you're going to be laying around in your underwear all the time, but you can go on vacation and you're still getting paid with fixed billing. You know, so that is why I like the fixed billing way of doing business. So if I were to jump out of my own, and to answer his question is, how many of those hours that he's doing the math on are guaranteed? And then on the other side of that argument, I would say even in the place that I'm at today with all of my fixed build clients, it's not guaranteed. Because what if one of those clients gets purchased? What if one of them goes out of business? What about all the other things that are out of my control that happen? So you need that cushion in the middle. And then you got to take in the roll of the dice with the gods or Murphy or however you play that in. Murphy's going to come and knocking. So you have to have that cushion in the middle too. So I don't want to give away anymore because that's anything we're going to talk about in Canada. So I'll circle back after Canada. That's my two cents because I want to be able to not work but still make money. And I don't want to have to trade my time for every dollar I get. So
gotcha. All right, let's go on. Mr. B, how you doing, Paco? Good to see you. Mr. Marvin, what do you have to add?
There were multiple questions in there, and I'm going to answer it from a different perspective, from the standpoint of, it sounds like he wants to go from part-time to full-time or leave his regular working job. And the one thing that I've always told everybody is, forget about figuring out how the numbers are. It's more or less, can you replace your income by leaving? And by income, I'm not just talking about, you know, the bottom line on the W-2. My salary is, you know, $40,000. Do I make $40,000, you know, doing this? It's got to be more than that. It's got to be your salary. It's got to be your benefits. It's got to be your retirement. It's got to be all your office expenses, all of that stuff. So you've got to figure out what that number is, and can you replace that by leaving your main job? And that's what I, you know, did when I left. The number that I was making, I was already making on the side, working, you know, basically, you know, an hour a night plus weekends. So I knew I could do that and leave. The other thing you've got to do is, I can tell you one of the things that I've started doing, well, I shouldn't say started, I've been doing it for about 10 years. John talked about those hours. And so I've actually made a sheet, and I know you're not going to be able to really see this, but this is a hour calculator for myself that I go to the website, mysalary.com. Mm-hmm. And I look up the job title, and I have one for myself. I have one for techs I use. I have one for help desk support and all of that. And I plug in what the total combined salary plus benefits is. So for instance, for PC technicians, I haven't updated this in a while. So a couple of months ago, basically the salary plus benefits for a PC technician in my zip code in Fort Lauderdale, Florida was $59,700.
Okay.
So if I were to hire a tech, I know that his salary plus benefits and all that have to, you know, that's about the average for Fort Lauderdale. So I've broken down based on 2,080 hours, which is 8 hours a day for every day, every working day of the year, 52 weeks times 5 days, blah, blah, blah. Then I actually went down to 240 days, assuming 2 weeks vacation. I also went down to, that's billing 8 hours a day. That ain't going to happen. And then I have 7 hours, 6 hours, 5 hours, 4 hours. And basically I figure that a tech that I have for me has got to be able to bill 4 hours a day, because most of that non-value add that John talked about, that tech's not going to have to do. I'm paying him to work, so he should be working. And so I have how much of the rate per hour that tech is supposed to make. And then up top, I have it for myself. Obviously, I have to calculate that differently because I do have all of those non-value adds.
Right.
And all of that. So whatever formula you use, however you get there, just realize that you've got to replace everything, you know, salary, benefits, retirement, and then be able to pay for office expenses if you rent space, all your tools, all your certification training, all of that stuff, and figure out what the billable hour is. And then if you're going to do some sort of retainer, recurring income, managed service, whatever you call it, I basically count that as 50% is where I will start to count that. Meaning, when I first started doing that with my contract clients, the first contract client, I didn't count as guaranteed money.
Yeah.
Because if that client went away, it was gone. I just didn't do that, even though it was there. So now I think it's 72% of my clients are what I call maintenance agreement.
Okay.
So I don't have, you know, I've got some of them that I'm using managed service products with. I've got some of them, they're just paying me you know, a retainer. I've got some where it's a reverse retainer. It's a retarded system, I know. But I know that I can charge them X number of dollars per month based on what I do. Some of it is, you know, money for time. Some of it, it's, this is what I'm charging you. If I don't do any work, you're still getting charged because I've got automatic stuff in process. And then if I do work, it's taken out of that. So, you know, there's no rollover for me, John. That's all I can say.
Hey, man, brother, I'll give you a hug when I see you in Canada.
Well, you know, it's funny you say that because I just noticed that Matt Rainey was in the chat room. And yeah. Matt basically said, never rollover hours. These aren't cell phone minutes.
Amen. Amen. Hey, I'll add on to that, you know, for his question, you know, if he's building up his list of expenses that he thinks he's going to have, you know, he should have passed that around to about 15 people to look at that because he's going to miss something. He's going to miss a big one.
I agree.
You know, that's one of those things I wish I knew now that I wish, you know, knew then or however I want to say that. The other thing is people always forget to put in fun money. You know, this is your job. You might love doing it, but, you know, money doesn't buy happiness is BS. All right. I mean, whoever you see sad people riding a jet ski. So money, you know.
There's the great country song about that. You know, money can't buy everything, but it can buy me a boat.
There you go.
You know, and I'm not, you got to have fun money for you, for your family, for your kids, you know, whatever you're doing. And, you know, don't leave out things, you know. Marvin talked about retirement. What about your kids? You going to help them with school? Better start sacking that away. That ain't cheap.
Huh.
You know, all that kind of stuff. Yeah, I've got it.
Mine are on their own.
You know, so all these little things, you know, and that's a personal judgment, but I'm just saying that's something, you know, people forget about.
No, so it's true. It's true.
I would tell everybody, bring your expense list to Canada.
Yep.
You know, what about your liability insurance? What if you get injured? You're going to have,
disability insurance,
yep. Or you know, something to replace your income. The heck, Aflac? What's the name of that? Help me out. Somebody throw me a bone. You know, it's a lot of insurance you got to have.
Yep.
You know, especially if you're the breadwinner and you're the one. What about health insurance?
Yeah. Yep. Yeah. All this. You know, I loved hearing Marvin your thing where you said 50% of your day is actually billable hours. Because I think this is the first time that I've actually heard somebody say something like that and actually be honest about it and go, listen, you're not working solid 10 hours a day. And for the ones that are working 18 and getting little to no sleep and killing themselves slowly, you've got to really realize what it is you're trying to do.
Right. And remember, I say that as, you know, it's going to start an argument because there are some people listening with companies where they try to account for every bit of time.
Sure.
And accounting for time is one thing. If you need to make sure that if, you know, if you've worked 9 hours, you know, where did that 9 hours go? Track it. You know, it took me, you know, it took me an hour to drive to this customer. I was there for 2 hours. It took me an hour to drive back. You know, some people can't bill travel both ways. I know that some people do. I do not. And actually, for most of my covers, I don't charge travel because they're within a range that's just built into my price.
Sure. Right.
But others I do, and it's one way travel unless it's, you know, out of town. If I drive to Tampa, I'm charging both ways.
Absolutely.
But yeah, my formula was 50%. So, you know, yeah, my goal is to bill 20 hours each week. Luckily, most of the time I can bill more for that because I, you know, do work some Saturdays where I'm doing a server installation or some sort of project. But that's where you've got to figure out for you what your formula is. Because even if you do the retainer or managed services or recurring billing, you've got to count your time against that somehow. Because if you're making, you know, if you're making $500 a month from a client, well, is that 10 hours at $50 an hour? Or is that 5 hours at $100 an hour? Or is it 20 hours at $5 an hour?
Oh, no, you didn't.
I don't know. Ouch. But I mean, if you're, yeah, just because you have recurring income, you know, you've got to make sure you've maximized that. If you're, you know, yeah, if you've got a, you know, a bunch of money coming in, but you're still working like a dog, where's the return on that? For who? For what?
Exactly. Exactly.
Yeah, you got to meet your own comfort level. You know, if you're okay making $50,000 a year working 60 hours a week, that's one thing. But if you could work 10 hours a week and make $50,000, you might be happier.
And I got something to add to that, and we'll probably talk about it in Canada too a little bit. But I want to let Paco, because Paco's coming from a little bit different point. Now, he was listening to the podcast live, and he's like, oh, this conversation's too good. I got to get in. Now, quite honestly, he was supposed to be watching my phones, but he said, I can't be here because, you know, he has obligations and things to do, and I understand that. So no big deal, and that's why we have Don J go on there. So he's taking care of the phones. But Paco apparently all of a sudden became available and wanted in to talk about this. So Paco, what is it from your standpoint? Because you're trying to make that transition from going to part-time to full-time. So where do you see a percentage of retainer versus break-fix clients?
So first, to address everyone's action of what you just mentioned, yes, I did have a prior engagement and plan that ended early, so I wanted to come in as I was listening to this on my way home, first of all. So thank you, Don, for covering my shift.
Translation, he called the babysitter. Said, get over here.
No, actually, she got dropped off with her mother earlier today. So that's a whole nother story. Because so I can join everyone at the unconvention next week.
There was, I knew the reason behind it. I just didn't want to go into too much detail. But thank you for sharing.
No worries. So, you know, being a single father is a little bit, you know, trying to juggle a lot of hats. But
yep,
I cannot say anything because Jeff has five. So I won't say anything about
that. Yeah, but I've got someone to help. So.
So anyway, going on. What was your question again, Jeff?
So the question that came in, we were talking about, Michael was talking about retainer versus break fix. He wants to go from, if he wants to break away and go from his part-time gig to a full-time gig,
right,
what percentage of retainer client would he feel comfortable with that he would be able to leave his full-time job in order to make it so that he's got a decent amount of income coming in on a regular basis? Because obviously, like these gentlemen have said, there's a lot of highs and lows in different things that you need to build in, and you need to build in those cushions. But from your standpoint, you're looking to make this move here shortly. What are you looking to do to get you to that point where you feel comfortable enough to where you can go full time in your business?
So the plan is, and I haven't been shy about it. So the plan is for me to go full time in 2017. So January 2017 is when I put my 2 weeks and I'm doing this full time is what I give it myself. So this has been talked about on my previously before. Now, gauging to try and do that, me comfortably, is being able to do it 50%. And the reason why it's 50% retainer, which makes up half of my income now, is because within these 6 months, I'm planning to pay down as much debt as possible, which with the plans that I have so far should be about close to half. So if I can secure half of the retainers being monthly income that would maintain up to half of my current income, I should be in a better footing as it comes in January. Now, I am putting some other things in place, which is kind of probably outside of this, but by being able to pay down that debt, because that's what a lot of people tend to not think about. A lot of people think about how much money do I got to make in order to make the jump? When in reality, they need to lower as much debt as possible so that when they are making what they can, they may not be able to hit the mark that they want right away, but they can kill a lot of the debt that they have that would make it as if they were making the amount that they need to go ahead and leave. And by that, I'm implementing other streams of income to help achieve that. And that's some of them is outside of the computer business. Some of them is within with my relationships and just the opportunities that I'm involved with here locally and other avenues as well.
Okay. So you're looking at a 50% retainer clients to have that kind of cushion, even though retainer clients, technically, whether we do contracts or not, can leave at any given time.
Correct.
Okay. But that gives you enough cushion to play around. And obviously, even with the break fix, a lot of people have been saying lately that break fix is slowing down. They have to go out there and they got to get it more to make it happen. And maybe that's true in some places. I don't know. I shut off my Google AdWords because I have other things going on right now. And I keep not answering the phone. That's all I can tell you because I just don't have enough time to deal with all these customers.
I don't want to be a jerk, but business is hard everywhere.
Exactly.
I've been working the past 3 weekends. I mean,
doing
Windows 10 upgrades.
Yeah. I mean, you have to. So you've got your ebbs and flows, right? You've got your hills and valleys. That's the way any type of business or any type, well, I wouldn't say job, but that's the way most businesses work. So you've, and that's what you're talking about, John. You've got to build in those ebbs and, or those cushions to be able to take you through those lower months where you're not sitting there panicking and building in fun money, vacation money, all that kind of stuff.
And this is the whole point too about saying putting systems in place, which is why it's 50% for me, because I have a system that works. I mean, I really don't have, I've created a system that is working on its own and it's doing its thing. And I simply just got to go from place to place. Now it gives me the opportunity once I have the time to get that other 50% of retainers and, you know, and go from there.
And I will, right. And I will tell you that a lot of times some of the things we talk about and different people have come back and said, well, you know, I can't do that in my area or this or that or the other. We understand there are different situations for different people. And talking to a bunch of different techs and being in different forums and groups and stuff like that, what I'm starting to find out is, and maybe it's a little more feasible if you have a spouse that actually works a job that's getting you things like maybe health insurance. Maybe that helps you to be able to take that transition a little bit easier than. And I'll explain in my situation. For what I make at my full-time job with 5 kids, even though 2 are gone, and I've only got 3 left in the house and a wife and all the things that entails, okay, there's no way in the world. I mean, I would have to make a good amount of money in order for me, because I'm a single income earner for my household. So for me to jump ship at this point after 23 years, it's not happening. But my plan for me is I can retire at 30, which is going to be 7 years from now, and I can go into this business full time. That is why I do this. Okay.
And you mean after 30 years of work, not at 30.
30 years. What are you saying? I'm looking old. Is that what you're telling me?
Yes. All right. Let me wrap up my comments and then I'll let everybody
go ahead.
Back. So, you know, I'm talking about fixed price is what I like and all that, but obviously everybody, just like you said, circumstances are different. Right. And if you Google fixed price versus hourly, you'll find thousands of websites that argue it both ways. So it works for me with my business clients. I do not know how that would work with somebody that does break fix for residential.
Right.
It's probably much more difficult to get fixed billing clients there. So you got to somehow work out regular reoccurring from them in some other fashion. I totally get that. To get back to the heart of his question, if it were me today starting out on my own, I would be debt-free except for my house. Is I don't know where Paco's going to get to, but that debt thing is that Murphy's Law that we were talking about, or the gods coming to get you.
Right.
I would probably have 2 months of living expenses, whatever minimum, to do that. And I would probably have $2,000 to $3,000 of raw cash to cover anything that Murphy's, because you know your transmission is going to fall out the first minute you put your 2 weeks in. But it's just the way this stuff works. So you want to be prepared.
Right.
The other thing that I would do is have your exit plan fully ready and executed. If you're going to quit your job in 6 months from now, you can't eat, what are you going to do? So you have to have a plan just in case this doesn't work out.
Right.
You know, something like that. That's it.
Yeah,
not to end at a downer, you know, I'm sure everything's going to turn out fine. But, you know, a lot of the times I talk to a lot of guys and they come to me and say, well, you know, I'm not making any money and all that. And I remember when I first started out, you know, I worked a lot. Well, I work a lot now, but I mean, I worked a lot. And these guys are just coming back to me and saying, well, you know, I'm working 8, 9, 10 hours a day. And I'm like, really? I mean, you got a part-time job, buddy. You got to be telling it. You got to get that done if you want to get it to the point where, you know, go back and listen to the stories about how Matt Rainey got it started. Right. You know, he was burning the candles at both ends, going to school, doing, you know, giving the dues. So yeah. It's not easy. But the great thing about now, which we talked about in the past, is you have all of us that are more than willing to help.
Right.
In whatever little ways that we can. You know, I'm not saying we have all the answers, because the only thing I know for sure is I don't know everything. So I'm still learning all the time, and I can't wait to get to Canada to get schooled on the fluke. So the end of my rant.
So my piece about that, and I'll try and pick it up from the downer that John just did.
Thanks. Well, thanks for that. Lots of love.
On a higher note, though.
On a higher note. But, you know, Jeff made a good point where everybody always comes in and says, hey, I can't do that because of X. Well, you know what? It's on you to be creative with what you got.
Right.
Because my business model, and everybody understands my business model, I had to piece that together because of obstacles that I had to run it as a full-time shop. And I was able to get it running. It took some time, but after 3 years, it's running. So if it's not work, if there's something that's not working, be creative about it and figure out what's going to work for you and what's not. Because I bet you any money that if you go ahead and pick out some of the things that we're talking about, you're going to be able to assemble something together. And if you don't, there's a place called google.com that you can actually Google, like John just said, that there's going to be plenty of arguments back and forth. But in those arguments, you're going to piece out some of those stuff that may work out better for you.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. And one of the things too, that I want everybody to know out there, that if you're making X amount of dollars, whatever it is that you want to pull in, but you're working 80 to 100 hours a week and it's still not making ends meet, whatever that might be, okay, you need to figure out some things and maybe change. And times will always change, so you always have to adjust your model slightly one way or another. A lot of people, when it comes to retainer clients, want the, I'm going to set up my remote monitoring software on said machine. They're going to pay me X amount per machine, and I'm just going to sit back, like John said, in my underwear and just get paid. Okay. Now that we're out of fantasy land, that's not the way it works. In a way, a lot of these bigger MSPs do it is they have people that's all they do all day long is monitor their monitoring services. So a lot of times as single technicians, we look at it and we go, well, how am I going to do that? And I'll give you an example. There was a person that I interviewed a while back. And basically, when we talk about retainer clients, what he does with his customers, which I think is genius, to be honest with you. And I think if some people actually pick this up, they would actually change some things in their business. But one of the things that he did, instead of doing a remote monitoring service and just sitting back and watching the cash flow in, he decided, you know what? What I'm going to do is I'm going to bill my clients quarterly, and I'm going to do a cleanup at $89 a pop, let's just say, is the number, okay? $89 a pop 4 times a year, okay? Now, depending on what you're doing for remote monitoring service, in my opinion, what most people are doing, that $89 times 4 for the year is a lot more money than what you're getting paid on a monthly basis, or what I'm saying, what you're keeping on a monthly basis after all your expenses are gone.
I remember this show, and he had his stuff together.
Yeah.
I can't remember who that was, but he was locked on, and it was residential. It was all residential.
And what he did was, when he got done with the cleanup and the client paid him, they set up the next appointment. So he's got these things going all year round with all his client base, and he's making enough money to do the things that he needs to do. And that's what I'm saying. There are, like Paco was saying, there are different ways to skin a cat. Now, you PETA people don't get offended, but yes.
Yeah, that was Jeff's words, not mine. So PETA, that went to him, not me.
And they're delicious. And they are delicious.
So definitely think about what you want to do. There are many different ways to do things. And if you have questions, ask. Because again, like John said, we don't always have all the answers, but we can usually find somebody that's going to have some answers, that's going to be able to help us out. And John, I don't know what that means. You guys are in your texting. Anyways, Marvin, anything else to add to this?
I'm purely keeping track of all the animals you've mentioned so far today.
I didn't say anything about raccoons.
Oh, that was B.
Oh,
he's sorry. Got him in his pool.
Oh, that's not good.
Marvin, hey, they get hot too. I think we've hit all the main points.
Okay.
You know, basically you've got to find your comfort level, make sure you're covered. And whether that's 50%, 100%, or even if you want to go to 150. But just remember, retainer recurring income is not guaranteed.
Right.
And that doesn't mean that you're not still going to have to work.
Absolutely. Well put.
This is a great topic, and this is one of them that I'm going to be leading in Canada. So I'm like jacked about this one. I'm hoping it's a vigorous discussion and some good banter back and forth and all that kind of good stuff. I'm sure Paco will throw something at me during the day, get me going. So
probably more than likely. Keep you on your toes.
I'll get the pot stirred up.
Everyone who's listening, buy your ticket.
Yeah. Do it, man. Hey, you still got time? There's still some tickets left. We'd love to see you there. And if you'd love to shake my hand, which I know you would, just kidding. No, seriously, we'd love to meet each and every person, and we'd love to see you there. And hopefully we can all come together and impart wisdom on each other to get better at what we do. And I'm always learning new things. I mean, always. All right. One last thing before we end off the show. So I got an email and somebody had sent a link about this is one of my pet peeves. I cannot stand clickbait. Can't stand it. And what I mean by clickbait is when you put something in a title so people will click on it to read the article, which doesn't really mean what it was supposed to mean, but hey, it sounded good and I'm going to get you to click on it because you're stupid. Yes. Thank you for that, Marvin. Anyways, nice pictures. Microsoft confirms Windows 10 new monthly charge. Forbes magazine.
Oh, I heard about
this. I read this too.
Yeah. So as I was reading it, I get a little irritated. But basically the gist of it is the cost will be $7 per user per month. But the good news is it only applies to enterprises. For now, the new pricing tier will be called Windows 10 Enterprise E3. And it means Windows has finally joined Office 365 and Azure as a subscription service. Now, John or Marvin, correct me if I'm wrong, or Paco, you might know too, but the last time that I used any type of volume licensing or enterprise things of that nature, we had to pay a yearly fee in order to access the license that we had. Is that still common today?
If you buy the Microsoft volume license, and if you go to the licensing center and you buy the minimum of 5 for whether it's, you know, Windows, Exchange licenses, Office, what they wanted to do was have you buy them with a, I don't remember what the exact term is, John, maybe you have to help me, where, you know, you paid the license and it was perpetual where you got the upgrades. And it was substantially more than just buying the product outright. But what a lot of people did was they would just buy the fee without the upgrade and then just keep that license. So for instance, Microsoft Office would cost $373 per license. And people would just use that until they couldn't anymore. And with the volume licensing for a business, you know, it's not tied to a specific machine. So if I've got an office of 20 people, you know, and I had to replace machines each year, I could take the license from, you know, say 5 machines got replaced this year. Well, you know, if you were to buy the retail version, well, the license can't transfer to a new machine. With the volume license, it could. So we would just, you know, use those volume licenses, even if we got new machines, you know, 5, 6, 7 years. So Microsoft is like, wait a minute, why are we letting people buy a volume license and use it perpetually? So that's where they're going to this monthly fee deal.
And Rainey posted it in the chat as well, which I think you're talking about software assurance.
Yeah, software assurance,
yes.
Right.
Yep. Yes. Yeah.
Yep. So, you know, I don't see what the bad thing about a subscription model would be. The part about this is, you know, just what B was saying is it's all really confusing for a small business.
Yes.
Why not just give them an alternative that is some sort of easy subscription model where they pay X amount of dollars per year for Windows and they automatically get all the updates on that PC and maybe give it some way if that PC gets retired, they can just transfer it to, you know, it's a one-off, one per PC, but then include all the things they want. Maybe you want Office, maybe you want Windows, maybe you want... make it easy for us to give them money is what I'm asking. Instead of having to comb through open license and VLK keys, software assurance. And
it's ridiculous.
Because, you know, I would love a way for it to be easily to be legal. But, you know, nobody saves their keys. I got to do all that for them.
Right.
So go ahead.
I think Microsoft is trying to get to what Adobe's doing, where you pay the monthly fee for the Adobe license and then you can just go up and download whatever products off of there. I think Microsoft's trying to get to that, to where you just pay a monthly fee to Microsoft and here's your licenses and they'll track how many PCs you have it on. They'll have an enterprise version and a residential version or however they name it. I think they'll get there. And that's what they're starting with this Windows 10. That's why they were pushing everybody to get there.
How do you feel about that?
How do I feel about it? Yeah. I don't like it.
You don't like it.
Well, here's the thing, though, that I think a lot of people don't realize. Okay, so you're not going to put Dell, HP, so on and so forth out of business. So the reality is most of us, even in businesses, even if you're buying a pro license, you're buying it on a machine that you're buying from a Best Buy, a CDW, a whatever. And so that license is tied to that machine. And the difference is if you buy a retail version of Microsoft right now, it basically you can move it to any machine you want. The OEM licenses are tied to that specific machine that you install it on first.
And so, I'll add on to my comment, too, as long as they still offer both.
Yes.
As long as you can do a subscription, but still buy a volume license.
And that's what I'm saying. It will never, especially for the residential side. And like I said, okay, how many home versions of Windows have you seen in a business environment?
Over the last 20 plus years, too many.
Yeah, exactly. It happens all the time, all the time. So people have been doing it wrong. And I agree. I don't like how complicated Microsoft licensing is. So I'm with you, John. I would love a more simplified process that goes, you can either have this. It's like this. I get Office every year from my work for $10 or every 3 years, whatever they, when they do it. Okay. $10. Because that's the thing they have through the program, through work, whatever. No big deal. Okay. Now, I could have Office 365 and pay the yearly $100 fee, but I don't because I don't really feel the need for it. I just need Office on this production machine and that's it. So again, both are still available to me. And even if I was paying the one-time fee of whatever it is, $130 some odd for the one version, so what? And it's good for 3 years until they come out with the next one, and that buy the next one for $130, whatever.
Well, I think there's some huge advantages that Microsoft could hit here. You know, if they keep their partner network open to everybody, you know, because like B and I have a little advantage when I deal with volume license keys and software assurance. I don't know anything about it. I call Synnex and I have my guy take care of it, so I know it's legit. So you know, I got 90 endpoints and I need this license and I got to have this flexibility. You sell me what makes it legit. You figure it out with Microsoft. So I don't have to spend the hours to do it. But you know, I don't know what maybe smaller techs do that don't have those relationships, or maybe they don't have that need or whatever. But if they made this easier for you to be a partner with Microsoft, you get a little percentage back on the subscription. You know, it would also encourage some of those non maybe less integrity techs to sell licensed software. Because we've all run into that before, where you show up and there's no keys and the Windows is hot, for lack of a better word, and all that kind of stuff. So
I still get emails on that today. I've got people walking into shops with 50 end users, and they're all illegitimate copies of Windows on 50 machines. I'm like, how in the world? But somebody, somewhere, somehow got away with it. Yeah. And I've seen it happen for years. It's been like that forever. So. From a residential standpoint, no. Are they going to go to a subscription model? I doubt it. Because quite honestly, I don't see any advantage. Let's face it, you know, from the tech industry, here's the problem, right? Okay. We upgrade Windows. No end consumer out there, other than when this Windows 10 thing came along, actually upgrades their Windows. When do they get the new Windows? When they buy a new machine. That's like over 90% of the people. So we're the 10% of weirdos that actually will buy a license and upgrade our machines because, hey, this is kind of cool.
Yeah, but if I look across the river at the Apple side of the house, they do this all the time for free.
Yeah.
Meaning there are OS upgrades, there are all their kind of stuff.
And they sell a premium, an Apple tax on a premium hardware.
I'm with you too, but now we should do that as well with a lot of the high-end Surface devices, XPS devices. You know, depending on what level you're playing with in these fields, we can easily spend as much for just as nice as a machine, you know, as an Apple Air or something like that. So, you know, I do think there's a percentage of clients out there that would like to shell out X amount of dollars, whether it's monthly, yearly, or whatever it is, just to know that I've always got all the updates. I'm running the latest version. I don't have to worry about it.
Yeah. And from a business standpoint, again, it's a fixed cost. I agree with you. That's the way to go. I think the people, what they're worried about and where I find this clickbaitable is that people have been pushing it and saying, well, you know, this is going to come down to the residential side too. And I'm like, no, it's not. There's no, you're not going to, Okay, I'm sorry, Dell. Yeah, sorry, you can't sell your machines anymore. You got to sell it with a script. You know, it's not going to happen.
So, you know, and Rainey in the chat saying this is the quote-unquote last version of Windows. And yeah, it might be, but at some point they're going to draw a line in the sand and say, okay, your old chipset's not going to work with this last version of Windows as we continue to update it. So, you know, because otherwise their partners would be pissed on the hardware. And
when Apple does that all the time, they're like, you get this free upgrade, but it doesn't support your hardware. Sorry, suck it, go buy another one.
Well, and it's just like when they change the connector, when they change anything, you know, and it's happening on our side of the house now with micro USB and USB-C.
I mean,
I love USB-C, but now I'm pissed every time I pick up a micro USB device that I've got 7,000 cords for. So, you know.
He digresses.
Yes. Anyways. All right. I think with that, we will go ahead and
the horse is dead.
We kind of beat that horse. Yeah. So, Paco, if people want to find out more about what you're up to podcast wise and, you know, business wise, and if they want to ask you questions or, you know, get a hold of you, what's the best way for them to do that?
They can get a hold of me either on my website, prodigytex.com, or you can listen to that other show, the Computer Business Podcast with me and Matthew Rodella. I was about to say Matt Rainey for some reason, with Matthew Rodella. And, yeah, we talk about essentially a lot of the great tips and tricks and essentially good topics on running your computer business.
Absolutely. All right. And Mr. John Dubinsky, where can people find out more about you?
Mavengroup.net.
And you see his beauty. Is your picture still on your website?
I am on my website.
Yes. Beautiful man.
But don't come look at me. Come check out my wife.
John, I don't know how I feel about that. Wow. Okay.
Hey, she's a lot better looking than I am. You know, I've traded up on this one, buddy. I got to look you to the stick.
Awesome. All right. And Mr. Marvin B., where can people find out or what you're up to?
I'm going to be attending Chris's wedding like this.
Oh, my God.
Was that mother of Joseph?
Please tell me that was blurred out.
Wow.
So you can find me at maninthevan.net.
Awesome.
I was going to ask the black people where kill things, but I won't go there tonight.
Wow. Okay. We did everything wrong in this show. Okay. Anyways, we're good until the end. I got to cut you guys off at an hour because we go too far and people just lose it.
Okay. All right.
You guys can come join
a fair
us live.
Question.
Yeah. Come join us live for the Computer Repair Podcast every Sunday at 4 p.m. Eastern over at podnest.com/Computer Repair Podcast Live. Join in on the conversation by calling in live. Yes, you can call in live or hanging out in the chat room. We have audio available over at podnest.com or subscribe using your favorite podcatcher. You can also subscribe to our YouTube channel, Computer Repair Podcast. Send your questions and feedback to podnuts@podnuts.com. Real easy to remember. Or you can leave a voicemail like we had today at 1-888-697-0162. And I want to thank all of our Patreon supporters. If you guys have gotten something from this show, I would appreciate you going over to patreon.com/computer repair podcast and supporting the show. Why is it so funny, John? But yeah, if you want to do that, go ahead and support the show. We definitely appreciate it. And I want to thank everyone for listening and subscribing to the show. We'll see you next time on Podnuts, the Computer Repair Podcast. Music provided by Steve Cherubino at stevecherubino.com.